brought to you by Penguin.
Masters of the Air, America's Bomber Boys Who Fought the Air War Against Nazi Germany, by Donald L. Miller. Read for you by Robertson Dean. To the gang at the Black Cat Bar, Elisa, Alexis, Ashley, Devon, Austin, and Mason. In the spring of 1944, we were masters in the air. The bitterness of the struggle had thrown a greater strain on the Luftwaffe than it was able to bear. For our air superiority, which by the end of 1944 was to become air supremacy, full tribute must be paid to the United States 8th Air Force. Winston Churchill, closing the ring. There was a consciousness always of the presence of his comrades about him. He felt the subtle battle brotherhood more potent even than the cause for which they were fighting. It was a mysterious fraternity, born of the smoke and danger of death. Stephen Crane, The Red Badge of Courage. Prologue. The Bloody Hundredth. The 8th Air Force was one of the great fighting forces in the history of warfare. It had the best equipment and the best men, all but a handful of whom were civilian Americans, educated and willing to fight for their country and a cause they understood was in danger, freedom. It's what made World War II special. Andy Rooney, My War. London, October 9, 1943. Major John Egan's private war began at breakfast in a London hotel. Egan was on a 2-day leave from Thorpe Abbotts, an American bomber base some 90 miles north of London, and a short stroll from the Norfolk hamlet that gave it its name. Station number 139, as it was officially designated, with its 3,500 flyers and support personnel, was built on a nobleman's estate lands, and the crews flew to war over furrowed fields worked by Sir Rupert Mann's tenant farmers, who lived nearby in crumbling stone cottages heated by open hearths. Thorpe Abbotts is in East Anglia, a history-haunted region of ancient farms, curving rivers, and low, flat marshland. It stretches northward from the spires of Cambridge to the high-sitting cathedral town of Norwich, and eastward to Great Yarmouth, an industrial port on the black waters of the North Sea. With its drainage ditches, wooden windmills, and sweeping fens, this low-lying slice of England brings to mind nearby Holland, just across the water. It is a haunch of land that sticks out into the sea, pointed, in the war years, like a raised hatchet at the enemy. And its drained fields made good air bases from which to strike deep into the German Reich. A century or so behind London in its pace and personality, it had been transformed by the war into one of the great battlefronts of the world, a war front unlike any other in history. This was an air front. From recently built bases in East Anglia, a new kind of warfare was being waged, high-altitude strategic bombing. It was a singular event in the history of warfare, unprecedented and never to be repeated. The technology needed to fight a prolonged, full-scale bomber war was not available until the early 1940s, and by the closing days of that first-ever bomber war was already being rendered obsolete by jet-engine aircraft, rocket-powered missiles, and atomic bombs. In the thin, freezing air over northwestern Europe, airmen bled and died in an environment that no warriors had ever experienced. It was air war fought not at 12,000 feet, as in World War I, but at altitudes 2 and 3 times that, up near the stratosphere, where the elements were even more dangerous than the enemy. In this brilliantly blue battlefield, the cold killed, the air was unbreathable, and the sun exposed bombers to swift violence from German fighter planes and ground guns. This endless, unfamiliar killing space added a new dimension to the ordeal of combat, causing many emotional and physical problems that fighting men experienced for the first time ever. For most airmen, flying was as strange as fighting. Before enlisting...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?